Hello, welcome to King's Church Bangor Sermon Podcast. We hope and pray that this message helps you in your journey with God and blesses you this week. If you want to find out more about King's Church, then head to our website, kingschurchbangor.org, or you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook for more updates.
Good morning. I love bowling. This is a bit of a shameful thing to admit to you, but I, at one point in my life, a year of my life, I went bowling twice a week to practice because I just loved it and I wanted to get the highest score that I could. And I actually, this is my claim to fame, I got 185. Okay, so if anyone beats that tomorrow night, do let me know. I was pretty proud of myself. Anyway, I'm Sam. If you don't know me, good to be with you. And I'm normally quite excited. I think you know that about me if you've seen me before. But I'm really excited this morning. And I'm excited because we get to start off a new sermon series looking at the Gospel of John. And as a church, we believe that the Bible, this book here, maybe you've got one with you, we believe that it's the living word of God. And we prioritize reading it, we prioritize studying it and going through it. And we take time to go through books of the Bible. And we go through them at different paces. But the next book that we're going to go through is the Gospel, the book of John. I'm excited to get to do that with you. I think it is so important for us to pick up this book. I think that the Bible can teach us, that it can train us, that it can guide us, that it warns us of certain things not to do, that it protects us from harm, that it inspires us, and that it almost gives us promises of how we can live our life. And the book of John, the Gospel of John, is no different. And so I've been reading and studying this book over the last number of weeks, and I'm just excited that we get to read it and be in it together as a church. And so I just really want to encourage you to open up the Gospel of John, to read it in your own time, to come along on Sunday morning, of course, and listen to this sermon series, but really to get stuck into it in your own time as well. And I just want to, I guess, endorse the book of John to you. The first thing I want to tell you is from a guy called Saint Augustine. He lived hundreds, a thousand and a half years ago. And Saint Augustine, it's going to come from the screen, he says that the book of John is it's deep enough for an elephant to swim, and it is shallow enough that a child, a baby, will not drown. Okay, and effectively, the reason why I love the book of John is because it's got so much depth to it that if you've been a Christian for 5 decades, you can still get something out of the book of John. But if you've been a Christian for 5 days or you're not a Christian, you can get something out of it. It is shallow enough for you to still be inspired by it, but it is deep enough that if you've been in it for decades, you will not drown. And secondly, a guy called N.T. Wright, who's a current theologian, one of the greatest theologians of our time, I found this quite funny. He said, "I feel about John's gospel like I feel about my wife. I love her very much, but I wouldn't claim to understand her." And I love that because the Gospel of John has so much in it. It is so rich. It is so deep. And there's so much that we can get out of this book. Okay. And I will not profess to be able to teach everything that's in this book, or the team that's preaching will not be able to cover everything, but we're going to do our best. And we encourage you to dive into it. Have chats with your friends. Go for coffee with people in the church and chat to them about it. But I kind of this morning want to do two things. I'm not going to delve into the text John 1:1 this week. I'm going to kind of give you an overview this morning, and then Peter next week is going to study the first few verses of John, which I think personally are the richest, potentially the deepest verses in the whole of the Bible. So do come along next week for that. But this morning I want to do two things. One, I want to tell you about the writings of John. I want to kind of give you a little overview of what's included in this book. And secondly, I want to talk to you a little bit about John, the writer. Who was this guy that wrote this book? Why should I trust? Why should I believe anything that he says? So that is my aim. Hopefully I can do that in the time that we've got before the kids come down. But I'd encourage you, if you've got a Bible with you, to open it up, find the Gospel of John, New Testament, fourth gospel. And I encourage you to have this book with you every Sunday, but also every day. Make notes on it, give yourself some annotations, highlight it. I really hope that God's going to speak to you through this book. And I love when I go through my Bible and I see the underlinings and I see the little marks I've made, and I remember how God spoke to me in those times as I read it. So I just encourage you to get your Bibles out and read it. But I said that Peter's going to start at John 1:1 next week. I'm actually going to start at the end of the book of John. And so if you flick to the kind of the end of it, John writes this book and then he gives a little epilogue at the end. And he basically tells us why he wrote this book. And so I want to start there. And so if you're at John 20 and then verse 30, John says this. He says, "The disciples saw Jesus do many other miraculous signs in addition to the ones recorded in this book. But these are written so that you may continue to believe," some of your versions might just say "to believe," "that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him you will have life by the power of his name." And so John, I think, has three aims in writing this book. And as we teach this book, we are going to share those same three aims. The first one is that we would continue to believe in Jesus. Okay, so a lot of us here this morning would probably say you're a Christian. Maybe you've been following Jesus for years, maybe decades. But this book is written so that you may continue to believe in Jesus. Okay, and I don't know about you, but personally, I find life challenging, right? It's got its ups, it's got its downs. I find faith sometimes hard. They're questions that you have to wrestle with. Sometimes it's hard to be a Christian, right? And I believe that reading the book of John, that as we go through it, that it will help us to continue to believe in Jesus, okay? Secondly, and basically, the reason why there's brackets where it says continue to, when they translated this text from the original fragments nearly 2,000 years ago, when they interpreted it, they couldn't, and translated it, they didn't know whether John meant to believe or to continue to believe. So that's why your Bible probably has one written down, then it has a little asterisk or a little letter, because we're not quite sure. But the great thing about the book of John is that it works in both ways, both continue to believe, but also so that you may believe. So that if you are not a Christian, if you do not follow Jesus, then this book is beautiful. It's perfect for you to read, to read it, and then to understand who Jesus is so that you may believe in him. And so if that's you this morning, I wholeheartedly encourage you. If you don't have a Bible, chat to someone that's with you or come and find me and I'll give you one. I'd love for you to read the book of John. And John is actually one of the most handed out books, handed out gospels that we give out to people, because it's so amazing for those who do not know Jesus. And I again want to encourage you, for your friends, for your mates that you know who don't know Jesus and they ask you questions, this book is so helpful for you to answer them, for you to give to them so that they can learn. So it's great for people to continue to believe. It's great for people to believe. And thirdly, just at the end of verse 31 there, it says, "And that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name." So as we read this book, as we believe in Jesus, it gives us life, okay? Life in all of its fullness is what the Bible says. And so I don't want to live a mundane, boring life. I want to live an adventurous life with God where I see him do great and marvelous things. Okay, and I believe that as we read this, as we study this, we have access to the living word of Jesus. We understand who he is. We understand who God is. Tells us about him, tells us about how much he loves us, and he tells us about how we can glorify him, how we can live our lives to worship him. So I really hope it's going to be a good season. We're going to read it up until Christmas, and then we'll then continue it again in 2022. But it's a long book, right? So we'll be in this book for quite a while. We might dip out of it and then dip back into it. So just read it, please, because it's going to be great. I love John because it's got a particular depth to his writing, a beauty to it, which personally I don't quite see in the same way in the other three Gospels. So most people will know Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, right? There are four Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they sound very similar. In fact, 60% of the teachings, what is written in those three books, is the same across all three, okay? So Mark, probably wrote his gospel first. It's the shortest. He wrote it first. And then Matthew thought he had Mark's gospel in front of him and he decided to add to it because he thought Mark maybe missed out a few things that Matthew knew. So he added to it and then Matthew wrote his gospel. And then Luke, this kind of doctor, we'll go with doctor, smart guy. He basically had those two and he wrote something so that we would really understand kind of logically who Jesus is and who God is. But John was different. John didn't just use their text. John lived this out for decades and decades and decades before he penned this book. And he has a real depth to his writing. And you'll pick this up if you've ever read this book and as we start reading it next week. But there's a beautiful imagery that John uses. You might know that John didn't just write the Gospel of John, but he also wrote 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, and he also wrote Revelation. If you've ever read Revelation, you'll know that it is a book that's filled with imagery. And that's the kind of guy that John is. And he puts things in, I think, just a really creative and an artistic way to help us to learn. So I'm excited by this book. I really hope that you are too. And I just want to kind of endorse it to you, emphasize how much we'd love for you to get into it. But this morning, for the rest of this morning, I want to talk to you about this guy called John, the writer that we believe has written this book. And most people do believe that it was the Apostle John that wrote this book. He was a disciple. And he appears in all four Gospels, okay? This guy called John, okay? He's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And we kind of get a good picture of his life from those three Gospels. But he does also refer to himself in his own Gospel, but he just doesn't do it by name. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes' time. But I want to tell you a little bit about him because I think it's important that if we're going to learn from this guy, if we're going to understand his teachings and live them out, then I want to know that what he's written is true. I want to know that the advice that he's got for us is real, that it's valid, that it's reliable. So what gives him the right to speak to me, for me to take what he's written and apply it? I've dug into who John is. And I just want to kind of, I don't know, look at that a little bit with you all this morning, if that's okay. So that you understand who John is, so that when you then pick up this book and we start to read it, you can get the depth that John has. You can feel the same emotions that John felt as he wrote it. And you understand why he was so desperate to communicate the words that you have on the pages in front of you. And so I'm going to do a little whistle-stop tour of this guy named John. And the first time we encounter John is in the book of Mark, and Jesus has just started his ministry, okay? Jesus is around 30 years old at this time, and he's starting to get these disciples that he's going to teach. And back in that day, that would have been really common. Those that would have been teachers, and what you would have done is you wouldn't have kind of gone to a school and just sat there. You would have found a teacher, and you would have followed that teacher and learned underneath them. And so Jesus is basically picking his disciples, and he comes across this guy named John, and John's with his brother, who's called James, okay? They're called the sons of Zebedee, and they were fishermen, okay? So they had a business, they owned a boat, and probably multiple boats in their family. And so we often think of fishermen as maybe working class, not very rich. But back in those times, to have your own business that would have fed the town would have made that family quite well off. Okay, and Jesus finds this guy called John alongside his brother, and he says, hey, come follow me, be one of my disciples. And John and James, they effectively said, great, let's go. And they left everything. They left their dad, who was kind of probably hoping to pass on the family business to them. They left their homes. They left their security. They left their comfort that they had. And I kind of quite like that about John. That he was probably, at this point, maybe 23, 25. He was younger than me. And he decided to give up everything, give up the future that he had planned. And he decided to follow this man named Jesus. And I love that. And then in the book of Matthew, we read about John and his brother James, and they're given this nickname. They're called the Sons of Thunder. But the Bible doesn't really tell us why are they called the Sons of Thunder. Like, I really like that nickname. I think it's quite cool. But we're never really told why. So I tried to dig a little bit deeper, and I've got my reason for why I think it is. It's shared amongst lots of other people. But there's basically this... this story, and John's been with Jesus for quite a while. He's been seeing the miracles that Jesus is doing, that he's living out. And they walk, they're going around to these different towns, and they approach this Samaritan town, okay? And as they get there, the Samaritans say, no, we don't want to hear the teachings of Jesus. You're not welcome here in this town, and he sends them away. And so John, I picture him as quite, 25-year-old, full of enthusiasm and zeal and excitement. And he, as they're walking away from this town, he says, hey, Jesus, why don't we just send fire down from heaven and just obliterate that whole town? How dare they not welcome you? And Jesus, I think, kind of almost jokingly just says, you're all right, John. Not right now. Like, chill out, mate. And I think that John was just so excited to be in the presence of Jesus, that he was so excited to learn from him. And I think that's why he got his nickname, the Son of Thunder. And when we read about John, we also read that he was a very, very close friend of Jesus, potentially his closest friend. Most people know Jesus, 12 disciples, right? But he had a special place for three of them. One of those was John. Then there was John's brother, James, and then there was that guy called Peter, who was the one that walks on water. But these three, Jesus almost kept them with him nearly everywhere he went. And he took them to places that he didn't take the other disciples. For example, he took them when he rose Jairus' daughter, when he healed her. He brought those three into the room. There's this story of when Jesus transfigures on the top of a mountain. Okay, this slightly crazy story. And who's there? John. John's there. James is there. And Peter's there. And what happens is Jesus almost transfigures into this ridiculously bright light. And then on top of this mountain, Moses and Elijah appear. And I think to myself, what would it have been like to be John? This guy who's almost had the luckiest break ever, and he's managed to follow the Son of God, and he's walking with him and seeing all these miracles. He's then gone up onto this mountaintop, and he hears the audible voice of God. Jesus transfigures into this crazy bright light, and then who appears but Moses and Elijah? Like, it's insane. And John, at that point, he literally got on his knees, and he was frightened, he was scared, and I think it was maybe that point that John realized who he was in the presence of, what this actually meant for him. And we read that John was called the beloved. He was called Jesus's precious friend. So in John's actually, his gospel, what he writes, he doesn't refer to himself as John. He refers to himself as the beloved. Jesus had this really special place for John. He really got on well with him. They were really, really close friends. Some would say that they were best friends. And I love that. Some people read that in John and they think, well, he must sound quite arrogant to call himself Jesus's beloved. But I think of it that John knew that he was loved by Jesus. And I think that's one of the greatest things that we can learn in our life, is that we are loved by Jesus. And I think John went on to do all the things that I'm going to tell you about in a moment. I think he did those because he knew deep down that he was loved by Jesus. And that is the same for each and every one of us. John continued to follow Jesus. And if you've heard anything of Jesus' story, and I know most of us has, you realize that not everybody liked him. And they actually wanted to get rid of him. They wanted to kill him. And there's this moment where they're at the Last Supper. And when you think of the Last Supper, I imagine most of us think of that picture where they're all sitting in a really straight line, eating some nice food. Well, in that scene, at that Last Supper, where we know about the bread and the wine, they probably weren't sat at this one long table. They probably were sat in like a kind of circle, a square. And the chairs would have gone, obviously, round the table. But what would have happened at the end of the meal? They would have reclined on each other. They literally would have finished their dinner and felt really full. And they would have reclined on the person next to them. And in that Last Supper, at that moment, it was John that got to recline onto Jesus's chest. So he was sat next to Jesus. Again, one of the things, maybe he was Jesus's best mate, but John was one of the only people, maybe other than Mary, that got to feel Jesus's heartbeat, that he had his head on Jesus's chest. He was a close friend. And Jesus says to his 12 disciples, he says, just so you know, one of you is going to betray me. Okay, one of you 12 is going to betray me. And we know that that was Judas, but at the time they didn't know. And it's funny because Peter, who was sat next to John, kind of, I think, realized that John had this special relationship with Jesus. And he kind of nudges John. He says, John, ask Jesus who it is. Go on, see if you can find out. And John does. He asks, and he tries to again try and find out from Jesus who it is. We then find out that it was Judas. And we find that out in the Garden of Gethsemane. And this is probably John's moment of shame. This is probably the moment that he doesn't want people to know about. Jesus goes to a garden. He knows that there is something impending. He knows effectively what he is about to do. And he says, he brings his three closest friends, James, John, and Peter. He brings them along. And he says, you guys just wait by this tree. Could you pray? Please pray for me because I'm about to go through something that is going to be horrendous. And he says, pray for all those people that we've met. Please pray because I need to work out what I'm about to do. And he leaves them over there by that tree. And Jesus, this man that John had got to know so well, the Son of God, this guy that had done all these miracles, he's down and he's praying. He's praying to God the Father. And he does something which, again, I think we read and we just don't think about that much. But Jesus, in his realizing the enormity of what was about to happen, he starts to sweat blood. Now, scientists have completely agreed that this is possible, right? He starts to sweat blood because of the enormity of what's about to happen. And Jesus, multiple times whilst he's in this garden, he goes back to the tree that John's at. And he finds John asleep. He finds John asleep. He finds John has let him down. And he says, why can't you guys just pray for me? And one of the things I love about John is that he fell short. He fell short like every single one of us and every single person in this world who's ever lived. They've fallen short. And John fell short at that moment. I think that was his moment that he regrets. When he looks back on his life, he said, why couldn't I have just stayed up and prayed and done that thing that Jesus told me to? But John went on to live a phenomenal life, a kingdom, world-changing, life-changing life. And I love that about John. And again, I just want to, I guess, say here that John fell short. John knew Jesus. And he made a mistake, something that he probably regrets. And I want to just very quickly say to every single person here that maybe there's something that's put a gap between you and Jesus that's stopping you from being in relationship with him. Maybe it's something that you did. Maybe it was something that you regret. But I want to really tell you that when you know that you are loved by Jesus, that you can overcome that and that you can have a beautiful relationship with him like John did and went on to do. Garden of Gethsemane, whilst Jesus is praying, whilst his mates are asleep, Judas comes and he betrays Jesus with a kiss. And Peter, who's also quite bold and quite enthusiastic, he comes over with a sword and he chops this guy's ear off. And again, one of those things that we read and just think that's normal. But they were there. John was there, witnessing what was happening, witnessing Jesus being taken away. And what's interesting, at this point, all the other disciples basically flee. They're not close by to Jesus when the next few days kind of play out. Peter is relatively close, but he doesn't see the same things that John sees. And John saw Jesus kind of go on trial, go on this, the most unjust trial that's ever been. The man who has never sinned, Jesus, never sinned, never done anything wrong, put on trial. And he was effectively convicted of blasphemy, of saying that he was the Son of God, which he was. And he was therefore sentenced to death. And it was John that was there. It was John that was there witnessing his best mate, found guilty of a crime that he's not done anything wrong. He's not committed a crime. And then this is the part that, again, we sometimes skip out, but I think it's really important that we know what Jesus went through. And it says that Jesus was beaten, that he was flogged. And what would have happened is they would have put Jesus, put him down, bent over onto something like this. And they would have had his arms kind of chained together. And he would have leant over this piece of wood. And it says in scripture that he was whipped and he was beaten. And it says in John 19, it says, then Pilate had Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip. And I know we can really easily pass over this, and I know it's slightly graphic and not very nice, but I think it's important that we understand what Jesus went through for us and what John witnessed, what John saw his best mate go through. And so Jesus was on that piece of wood, and they got this whip, and it had multiple kind of strands in it, and at the end was this lead-tipped kind of, it was like a hook. And they whipped the back of Jesus. And as they pulled it out, they ripped the skin off of his back. And who is standing there? It's his best mate, John. And then if that wasn't enough, they then go and get a crown of thorns. And we think of a crown of thorns, we see it sometimes on top of a cross, or we see it on top of somebody's head and it's just balanced there nicely. But they got this crown of thorns, and they would have pierced these crowns into Jesus's head. And John witnessed that in his best mate. And then they got Jesus to pick up a cross, to carry it on that same back that has been whipped, that is bleeding and bruised. And they get him to carry his cross to the place where he's going to be crucified. And who's standing by? Who's close by? It's John. John's watching his best friend suffer. And then what happens is Jesus, he's basically put on this cross. And he's got these nails, and you see how big this nail is. He's on that cross, and that is driven through the palm of his hands. And then they put nails and they drive it through the top of his feet. And Jesus is hanging there in pain. John is watching. And people would have been crucified. It would have been relatively common back in the day. And the way that most people die is that they suffocate to death. Because when they're hung there, all their weight is going down, right? And so they can't actually get enough air into their lungs to be able to breathe. And so what happens is they would have, in their agony, they would have pushed up on the nail that was in the top of their foot so that they could just capture enough breath. And what they would do is they would break the knees and the legs of those that were being crucified so that they could no longer do that, so that their death would come quicker. But because Jesus, he had been beaten so horrendously beforehand, he didn't need his legs broke. He hung on that cross, and he was there because he wanted to die for my sin and for your sin. And when he was hung on that cross, he was way higher than what that cross is there. He would have been really high in the air. And when he looked down, not only did he see the people that were crucifying him, but he saw John. He saw John, his close friend, stood there watching, witnessing what was going on. And do you know who John was stood next to? He was stood next to Jesus' mum. And Jesus looks at his best mate, his close friend, John. He says, John, look after my mum. Look after my mum. And we know that that is what John went on to do. John was a really close friend of Jesus. And the great news is that Jesus, yes, he died on that cross for our sin, but he then rose from death. And they go in, these ladies who realize this and work this out, they go and tell the disciples and they say, Jesus isn't dead anymore. And John and Peter, they have almost like this race to the tomb. And John gets there first. He gets to the tomb first. He's the first one to see that tomb. And a few days later, John and the other disciples, they're on a boat. They're out at sea and they're doing some more fishing. And it's John who notices his best friend, Jesus, walking along the shore. And I just try and imagine what John would have felt, what John would have been going through as he saw his best mate back to life, doing all the things that he'd said he was going to do. I imagine John was realizing more and more all those things that Jesus had said. And John went on to be a pillar in the church. He went and planted churches. Along with a few others, he was the guy that they came to if they had any questions about Christianity. Christianity was exploding across the nations. And who's one of the most influential people? It's John. Now, John did not have it easy. Not only did he witness Jesus die on that cross, he saw his brother James stabbed with a sword for his faith. He saw Peter, his other best mate, crucified upside down because Peter refused to be crucified the right way up because he said he wasn't worthy of dying the same way that Jesus was. He knew that his best mates had all died because of what they believed. In fact, all of the disciples except for John were martyred, murdered for their faith. John lived, and he actually died most likely of old age. But it wasn't without persecution. There's stories in church history that John was once boiled in potentially water, potentially oil. He was boiled to try to get him to renounce his faith because he was such a pivotal figure in this Christian movement that the authorities didn't want people to hear about Jesus. So they tried to kill anyone that was going through this. And they said, John, just renounce your faith. Tell them that it's not true. And we won't do these things to you. But John didn't let Jesus down. John saw that what Jesus went through, and John was persecuted in similar ways. But John never stopped. John grew wise. And John would have been that guy that if you could have a Christian conference and you could invite that key speaker, it would have been amazing just to have John come. John would have come and he would have taught, and he would have had so much depth in the way that he would have taught, because he's lived this faith out for decades. And John started to pen the books that we have in here. He wrote five of them. We're going to be going through one. And this man, he saw so many things. He went through decades of persecution, but he went on an adventure. He went on an adventure where he saw God's kingdom come. And then Jesus, I try and kind of imagine this, but John would have then, he would have died as an old man. And he would have then gone and met Jesus once more. And I like to think of what that will be like for us when we go and see our best friend, Jesus, again. And so I want to endorse this book to you. It was written by a man who was willing to die so that he could get this in our hands. He lived this thing out so that we may believe in Jesus Christ. And so I want to live a life like John. I want to have the zeal and the enthusiasm that he had, but I also want to go on for decades, and I want to be wise like John, and I want to teach people who Jesus is. And I guess the question is, what about you? Do you want to have a life like John? It won't always be easy, but you'll be part of the greatest kingdom ever. And I want to believe in a man named Jesus who, when he was being flogged, he did that for me and he did that for you. When he was being hung on that cross, he was dying for my sins and he was dying for your sins. And so I just want to endorse this book to you, to study it, to read it, to learn it, and to live it. Why don't we stand?